up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
Tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new... So, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, North Face, Dyson Jacks, I'm out. Ricky on the board. S&P futures down 43. We were unchanged, actually a little up last night. My NASDAQ futures down 302, so that's not good. We need to have some more fighting in the Middle East. So much for the economic sanctions. So much for anything you hear 2 days later. Let's just say it's kind of hard to believe just about anything, wouldn't you say, Ricky?
Yes, indeed, Chief.
We're not sure what the... We're in bizarre world, as they say. We have Professor Carl?
We've been in bizarre world now for the last, 6 or 7 years at least.
Our friend, I tell you, you listened yesterday, Wayne sent me a cartoon from bizarre world. It was absolutely a riot. They got two people sitting at the bar. They got this kind of middle-aged lady with glasses, and there's a guy next to her. Looks like a middle-aged dude with a mustache and a beard. He's got kind of a... Look like he has like a flesh-colored shirt on. It's a cartoon. And she goes, "So how long have you been associated with doctors without clothing?"
Oh, God. All right.
I'm thinking, who thinks up stuff like that? I wish I had that kind of imagination. But, you know... You know where Bizarro World came from, don't you?
No.
I think he said it was like Superman comics, but it was the only world in the cosmos that's a cube, and everybody on there is nuts or something. Anyway, but I think that's what I said. But it would, I used to love that cartoon. I got a guy's got him dead forever, but anywho.
Well, there you go. Yeah, okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm just saying we have even more stuff. I'm going on Joel's podcast today, and he's going to ask me, what is a money manager thinking? God, how long do I have to talk? I've never seen this many variables in the air, like maybe ever, except for maybe Gulf War One or something. And what is this guy, Bessent, has now interjected himself, like him or don't like him, is another huge variable, other than the Fed and everything. So he jumped into the bond market when the 10-year got to 4.72. Guess what? Now it's 4.7.
Yeah, that didn't do a whole lot of good, did it?
No, but now he's back to 4.75. So he said he's got $1 trillion to play with. Plus, he interjected into the yen market when it was 163 because the Japanese panic when it gets over 160. Guess where it is this morning? Over 160. So what are we doing here? Or what are we about to do? And what do we, you know, unreal, huh?
Well, Chief, how many times does this movie have to play on the screen before, when you walk in the theater, you know what it's going to be?
Well, except today you may look at the world and you may look at the debt like you do, and you might say, gee, I need to short bonds here because these rates look like they're going to keep going up.
And all okay, of a sudden, how many times have you been hauled out on your shield if you did that?
Yeah, I know. And then all of a sudden now you got the Secretary of the Treasury who claims he's got a... Even though he's $40 trillion in debt, he claims he's got a trillion in his piggy bank to essentially mess with us. I mean, I don't know how you play it. That's what I'm saying. I'm not giving answers here. I'm just saying these are balls in the air.
Well, yeah, but they're not balls in the air because the outcome of these kinds of events, and therefore, you know, if the outcome's known and you do something and you don't get what you claim you're going to get, then after the first couple times you do it and you you get the same outcome, and it wasn't the one that you announced.
Right.
Okay. A thinking person must conclude one of two things. One is that the person who's taking the action is insane. That is a possibility. Okay.
You mean me? Yeah. I get it.
Well, the person who's doing it, whether you're shorting the bonds or whether you're the guy in the Treasury that's, you know, that's doing the thing that leads you to believe you should short the bonds. Okay. One or both of you is nuts. Or the second possibility is that the intended outcome isn't the one that's announced.
Well, it could be. He's the one who's nuts, but he's got more money than my clients.
Well, I don't. Okay. I'm not saying that the answer to the question isn't that he's nuts. Okay. I'm saying that either he is nuts or what he's really trying to do isn't the announcement, isn't what's announced. Okay, now I don't know which of those two things is the case. Okay, I don't know. But one of those two things is the case, because, you know, how many times do you have to see the same movie before you know what it is before you walk in the theater, right? So I am, look, as I have said for quite some time, there are long wave cycles that occur in economies. They occur because humans are humans, okay? And we tend to do the same sort of silly kinds of things and think that we can somehow make the results different. That never works, all right? One of the ways to end up broke is to play...
You sound like you're going into a submarine.
I'm sorry. No. One of the ways to end up broke in any market is to play the This Time It's Different game. All right? Because it almost never is. That's not to say that a different outcome isn't impossible. All right? But if I am on the plane, if I'm on the Great Plains, and there is a hill, half mile in front of me, and I hear heavy footfalls, lots of them, I don't think the second coming of Jesus Christ. I think stampede.
It could be okay. Buffalo. It could be buffalo.
It could be buffalo, right. But whatever it is, it's large animals, it's a stampede, and if I'm in the way, I'm probably going to get run over. And so, and by the way, I don't weigh 1,200 pounds, so this is very likely to be a very bad day if I don't do something about it immediately. And so... We have this kind of thing going on. You know, you look at, for example, and I think I brought this up on Friday, so if I'm repeating myself, I'm sorry. NVIDIA's earnings report comes out. Buried in the footnotes is the fact that during the last quarter, they took on another $100 billion worth of debt guarantees. Okay, so it's off their balance sheet, but it's there. It's a liability. It's real. It's live. All right. Now,
back up here. When you say, who's actually ponying up the money if they're just guaranteeing it?
Well, nobody's ponying up the money right now. Okay, that's the point. All right. Now,
if somebody does, if somebody wants to lend, if you want to let loose a fly out of your wallet or a moth, and you want to lend some company $100 billion to buy NVIDIA stuff, they're going to guarantee it somehow?
Well, they're backstopping these transactions.
But is
now,
it? But is it coming from a bank, you think, or a third party, or who?
Well, I don't know, because again, part of the point of putting this in a footnote as opposed to actually having it in the formal balance sheet and the discussion and the breakout and everything else is that part of the reason for doing it this way is so I can't figure that out. All right. So I can't get a handle on it that's accurate enough to put a default risk on there. Okay.
All right, sorry to jump you with this, but sometimes,
all right, now hold on.
Whatever, sometimes let me ask this a simple question on the.
Yeah.
You probably don't know the answer, but since you normally surprise me that you do, if they put up $100 billion, say, I'll pick a number, in guarantees, and you and I own a bank and we lend the first guy $10 billion, and they're guaranteed. Mm-hmm. So right. Next week, another bank loans the second guy. Is that like a first, second, third mortgage? Or we all, if both of them go under, are both of them equal footing with NVIDIA? Or are you and I first because we were first?
Well, I didn't read it. I didn't read the document because I can't get my hands on it, so I don't know. That's the problem.
Okay.
Okay. I don't know who's in first loss position. I don't know how I'm assuming that deals of this size are syndicated these days, but they may not be. Assuming they are, I don't know how they're structured.
Well, if you think NVIDIA's credit is good, you wouldn't care. You think they're
And that, by the way, is precisely why NVIDIA's doing it, because people think NVIDIA's credit is good, right?
Well, it's, now, so you got to worry about two people.
Well, I got to worry about two people. Now, here's the other problem. And this is what ought to make the hair on the back of your neck stand up. And maybe it's starting to with what we're seeing in the market in the last few days. Maybe. And that is this. NVIDIA's revenue, TTM, so trailing 12 months, okay, is like $240 billion.
What is that per share?
I don't care what it is per share. I care what it is in aggregate, because I'm looking at this other number in aggregate. Okay.
They have 25 billion shares outstanding, so it's an unreal number.
Yeah, I know. And the law of large numbers says that you eventually get into trouble with this kind of thing, right? But but here's the thing, is that I got a company that has revenue. Now, they have an insane gross margin, but leave that aside. We have a company with $240 billion, roughly, of trailing 12-month revenue that in the last quarter posted up $100 billion in debt guarantees. That, by the way, is more, and not by a little, than their entire revenue. Not their operating profit, their revenue. Which means...
Are you sitting down?
Well, I'm saying...
The revenue per share is $8 a share.
Yeah. Well, okay, but here's Chief.
Good God, it's like, how many times is that?
30? Stupidity,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But here is the alarming part of this sort of crap, is that the company on a 12-month forward run rate basis, assuming they do put another $100 billion of revenue guarantee of debt guarantees on their book next quarter for the next three quarters. They'll have put $400 billion worth of debt guarantees on the book against revenue of $240. Now, who knows what the revenue will be for the next three quarters? Maybe it'll double. Maybe, and maybe it won't. The other problem is that their days sales outstanding is now in the neighborhood of 60. And the amount outstanding has gone up substantially, too. Now, you know, and I know we talked about this on Friday because I remember bringing it up.
Yep.
That, you know, that nobody does 2% 10 net 30 anymore. But, we did. Excuse me, but ordinary commercial terms are net 30. So when I have DSO stretching out into the 60 range... I'm running into issues where people are not able to actually post up the cash. I'm now outside the realm of ordinary commercial financial terms, that where I place an order for a product, you ship it to me, and it goes through my accounts receivable, you know, the AR and the AP departments, and a check gets cut during the cycle. Okay, which is normally a 30-day rolling kind of cycle. That's normal. That's normal commercial terms. That's how it works in the world.
All right, before you, for those in the listening audience that have never run a business, it doesn't mean that you're a second-class citizen or anything. But what it means is you really don't realize that it's not whether you're making money or not; it's whether you have enough cash to keep the business going. Because if you got to pay the widget makers in 10 days and the people who you sell the stuff to don't have to pay you for 60, you got a problem. Whether it doesn't matter whether you're making money or not.
Whether you're making money on an accrual basis.
Yeah.
Right. Because accrual accounting says that you recognize revenue when you make a sale.
Right.
And you recognize, not when you receive the money, but you recognize cost when the obligation is incurred.
Right.
Which is not necessarily when you cut the check.
Right.
Okay, and in fact, it usually isn't. Now, under GAAP, accrual accounting is generally seen as being more honest, in that it more fairly represents the position of the firm. And we could have a big debate about that, but I would argue...
A simple explanation is, if you could do this, you own a saloon, you run to Sam's and you buy 50 cases of beer for a big St. Patrick's Day thing, and everybody charges by credit card, and you get paid in 30 days. Now what?
Right. 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 So,
well, hopefully you get enough cash to cover it, but if you don't, you got problems.
Well, if you don't, you're screwed, yeah. Right. Because by the way, the beer has been turned into piss.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay? So, yeah, I mean, it doesn't have any value anymore once it's been consumed, right? So, this is the problem that comes up all the time with this kind of thing. And there is a very real issue here. Now, how far down the road this is going to end up going, I don't know. But we are, you know, now we're blowing things up over in Iran again. Okay, whatever. When this whole thing started, when this whole dust-up started, the mantra was that the world was ending, the United States was screwed, there were going to be gas lines, we're going to be back to only being able to buy gas if, you know, on odd days if your plate ends in an odd number, and, you know, stuff like this, right? 1974 crap. I remember this. I was a kid, but I remember it. I remember sitting in line. You could only buy 5 gallons at a time.
I was in line, but I was in the driver's seat.
Well, I was in line, but I wasn't in the driver's seat because I wasn't 16 yet. But I remember these days.
There were guys, if they had a line, you pulled it, even if you had 3/4 of a tank.
Because if you had to go to work, you didn't have any gas, you're screwed, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, I remember all of this where, you know, dad went to work, he had to put up with it, but, we didn't go wherever the hell we wanted to go because fuel was a pain in the ass. And so there you go. And then, by the way, the really ugly part of this is that, you know, right now it's nice and warm, all right? In fact, it's stupefying hot right now here. This crap.
It's 80 degrees with like 85% humidity this morning. It's September, for God's sake.
This too shall pass. Yeah. Well, when I got up this morning and it was, you know, 70 with 95% humidity on my front porch. So that sucks. Okay, and it's going to
be. Well, you're only 70. We never got below 80 last night.
Well, it's going to be in the the low to mid 90s. Yeah. So all week here, it's going to be absolutely effing miserable. And I ran last night and it sucked. Big ones, but there's a run club that I go to, and then we drink beer afterwards. So then that makes it okay. That makes it better.
Yep.
But here's the thing: as certainly as night follows day and day follows night, winter follows summer, and with the price of number two fuel oil, diesel, being where it is. For those poor SOBs, particularly in the Northeast Corridor, that are still using
how many that is?
You know, it's down a lot because natural gas. When I was growing up, we had a tank in the basement and we used heating oil. Okay, and the reason we did it was quite simple. There was no gas pipe outside the house. and the oil was cheaper than propane. My grandmother
had oil heat.
Yeah, I mean that was before you had, before you had piped gas in most of the United States. Oil was the next most reasonable cost option, and then
was
propane.
That, not to go into ancient history, but just to let everybody know, was it because you guys? Well, the oil furnace was. How can I say this? Was it put in as an oil furnace?
Yes, ours was.
Because in Chicago, and my grandmother's and all the other houses,
a lot of them were retrofit from coal.
That's right. They just put oil burners in the old coal furnace.
Right, right. But that's, you know, yeah. So the majority right now, you're probably talking about 5 million households or something like this. I mean, this is just a guess looking at the EIA numbers.
Where does propane fit into all this? Propane is a derivative of oil, not natural gas. But is that price shooting to the moon too, or no?
Well, so propane prices are up a lot, and we have we have a lot of issues right now in this area, but you know, this is kind of a real problem in that if you look at, like, over the last, you know, month or so, it's up 10% or thereabouts. So I mean, where is that? You know, where is that going to be over time? Good question. But right now, you're talking about U.S. average is around $2.50 a gallon. All right, and as I've pointed out to people, you know, around here, I have piped gas available at the house. Okay, but there's an awful lot of people in this area that do not, and for the most part, the correct answer for people in that situation, even though the system is more expensive, is a hybrid where you have dual fuels. So you have a heat pump, and then you have propane, and the system can switch between the two. Calculating the changeover point correctly is the difference between getting a $1,000 heating bill and getting a $300 heating bill. Right. So, I mean,
according to this, propane is up back up to 74 cents, but it was in June, it was up to 90.
Well, it's, yeah, and the thing is propane is kind of a funny fuel in that local storage and distribution charges are pretty expensive compared to the actual cost of the fuel. Okay, but like, for example, in you know, if I look at it right now, you know, who knows where precisely that is, but Tennessee, our price is quite expensive right now.
You're talking about not the thing you carry for your grill. You're talking about the big tank in the yard and the truck showing up.
Well, yeah, because, yeah. I mean, you know, they come from the same terminal, by the way.
Well, right.
But yeah, I mean, there's now the tank for the grill is usually, you know, especially if you go to one of those swap places, you get reamed, because not only do they screw you on the price, but they only put 15 or 18 gallons of 15 or 18 pounds in the tank instead of 20, even though the tank holds 20. So they screw you out of the last few. You know,
How would you ever know?
Well, it's actually labeled, but like, you know, if you take one of those Blue Rhino tanks. You know, that's a 20-pound tank, okay? But if you go exchange it, it doesn't have 20 pounds in it. And you have to pay attention if you look at the, you know, hey, wait a minute, what's this? You know, well, guess what? You just got screwed out of the other, you know, four or five pounds. But you can take those tanks over to one of the U-Haul places or somewhere that has, you know, has a propane.
Oh, every big gas station here has.
Well, we've got them around, and because we have a lot of RV traffic, and of course, you know, the RV guys, you know, they use it for heat and everything else, and a lot of your fridges are dual fuel and can run on it absorption as well. So,
well, you know, the big issue for me with this is when I see what's happening, and I see the political machinations and the money in the system, and I see the winners and losers. Like you said about the oil issue, that was the big part with the money supply and the oil. People blame the inflation, or the politicians blame the inflation in the early 70s on the oil, but it wasn't. It was the Fed, just like it is now. And I don't know if you remember, Friday, this is, you know, I'm going to tell this stupid joke three times, but if there's four birds on a tree, and three decide to fly away, how many you got left?
I don't know.
Four. They didn't go anywhere. They just decided.
Yeah, all right. Well, there you go.
But I'm
yeah.
saying that's when Warsh gave his big speech on Friday about how severe he's going to be. And amazing how these shows and guests kind of come together, at least in my mind. I don't, listeners listen every day, but obviously I do. I'm here. We were talking the other day about, I talked about it for like 3 days with three different guests, about the video I saw regarding 29 versus today, in the sense that when the Fed back then watched the speculation, watched the stuff happen, and essentially didn't do anything until finally they tried to do a little something, and it you know, all of a sudden the market kind of collapsed. No, and kind of did collapse. And this guy's point was, once you go over the line, even the rational move to bring it back is enough to cause the problem. And I never thought of it that way. Now, whether the guy's right or not, I don't know. Just another thought swirling around in my empty head, right? So when Warsh was talking on Friday, it's all I was thinking about was that interview or that video, because he kept talking about how hard he was going to fight inflation, and he actually said that all the inflation over the last 5 years has been caused by the Fed.
Yeah.
First time I ever heard that. You and I talked about it all the time. He said it, and you and I, it sounded like the guy just read Milton Friedman's book like the minute before he got out there, one of his many books. And but then the question comes down is, my point is, he hasn't done anything. Does he think we're over the line? And if he raises the rates, all of a sudden the market's going to come flying out? Or the politics is different. A, there's an election. And I don't care what side of the aisle you're on, whether
there's
you're MAGA or whatever.
Right.
There's an election, okay? So, and the fact is, we have an administration that's got their nose up the ass of the Fed for as long as the guy's been in there. So and you have a way appreciably higher part of the population that owns stocks than you did in the 70s. There were no IRAs. There were no 401ks. There was a hangover of the Great Depression where, you know, I asked my uncle, do you have any stocks? Hey, I bought Northern Tissue during the Depression and I got wiped out. You know, some kind of joke like that. And it's all you'd ever hear. So people weren't, I mean, in 1982, when I was, you know, a year into the business, if you'd have walked into you see a guy like Carl at a garden party with his pinky up in the air and his wine, you say, I think you should buy some stock. Well, first of all, they'd cut me off at the bar, and then they'd maybe haul me out in a straitjacket because you're making 20%, or not 20, you're making 15% in a CD. What mere moron would try and find his mutual fund guy who's probably painting houses and put your money in stock? It's not going to happen. Well, this time, we're protecting this bubble. And I'm not saying I wouldn't do part of the same thing. I mean, if you drop me and Carl in the Oval Office, first thing I would do, we'd try and do something, but we wouldn't intentionally crash the market tomorrow. Now, whether or not we could do anything, which is the theme of this, could we do anything without causing that problem? Because you have, by the way, Carl, what you said just earlier is almost exactly the conversation with Kenny Pulcheri last week. It was 2 weeks ago. Palantir's earnings came out, and he said they kicked ass. Their earnings were up like 30%, which, by the way, is a lot. Duh. And I said, Kenny, yeah, they're up to 350. and the stock's trading 183. And he says, yeah, but they're still, I understand that. I get that. And if the stock's trading 120, maybe you breathe a sigh of relief and it stays at 120, but it didn't. Now it's 183. So now you're at, you know, 40-some times revenue.
Right.
And I'm sorry, it wasn't earnings, it was revenue. But, you know, where at some point here, if you and I are the two knuckleheads in the Oval Office, what exactly can we do here without being named as the two bozos that caused the crash? The crash
you can't, Chief, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
When you look at, I'm going to harken back to the NVIDIA thing, because it's the only way this can happen, and it's happening everywhere across the technology sector, okay? And by the way, it's showing up in all sorts of other places.
By the way, if you see Joel, let me know.
Yeah, he's not up yet. But it is. Here's the reality of it. No company of that size, right? Little company that nobody ever pays any attention to, can get away with something like this for a little while because nobody sees it, right? And by the way, that which you don't see, nobody calls BS on, duh, because someone has to see it. All right. No company of material size, no public firm that has to report, puts more than their sales on their sheet as external debt guarantees and gets away with it without a bubble being in operation at the present time. No one. Because the minute
you can for a while, but then
no. If you do it, the market is going to spank you instantly without, because they're like, hey, wait a minute, this guy is just put $400 billion worth of run rate on his debt side of his sheet, and he's only got revenue at $240 over the trailing 12 months. That's a load of crap. Buy. And the sales are going to happen instantly.
I didn't save it, Carl, but I might have been. I don't know if it was you. I mean, it probably was because you're 2 days a week. It was a CNBC article by somebody talking about one of the biggest issues NVIDIA has is finding ways to guarantee debt for their supply chain. And you and I went over that. I didn't save the article.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Or then I sent it to you, didn't I? I must have. I'm sitting reading this. I'll go back to my sense stuff. I mean, I'm reading this thing going, somebody actually wrote this article and isn't appalled. What do you mean? General Motors finding ways to lend money to people to buy cars for zero interest. It's like, okay then. Well, where can that go? I mean, in one hand and out the other, right?
All I'm pointing out, Chief, is that anything that disturbs this, and it will get disturbed because it's going to have to, is going to cause that disappear. It's going to disappear. And when it does disappear, the market reaction is going to be very severe. And that, you can't get around this. That's the way it is. So now, do I know precisely when it's going to happen? No, I wish I did, because I'd be short everything.
Well, no, you wouldn't. Okay. You'd wait until it was going to happen to get short.
Well, but I would do it the day before. Right?
Oh, yeah. Well, no kidding.
Well, duh. Right. Okay, Joel's up, so I'm going to shut up and let him have his time.
Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good, Chief. How you doing today?
I'm doing all right. I'm talking to Carl, telling him I was coming on your show today. Mm-hmm. That should be fun. And we're talking about kind of balls in the air. And what do you think is going to happen with the our treasurer? That seems Secretary of the Treasury. That seems to be jumping ahead of the Fed in a lot of ways, and he bought all the yen, and now the yen's not back to where he bought it, but it's back over 160, which causes the Japanese to have some problems. And what about the interest rates, where the 10-year is over where he did the stuff?
Is there to say, Chief?
Yeah, no, it's a. So where are we here, do you think?
Where are we? I think that we are at just from a long-term investing standpoint. When you look at the fundamentals of companies and earnings is what's holding this market up. If you looked at the geopolitical situation, you take everything else into account, the dysfunction between the Fed and the Treasury, oil, I mean, it's amazing that the market's at where it's at. And you know what? And people just think it's going to go up from here.
That's what it's happening for how long?
Forever.
Yeah.
Yep. And to me, it defies logic.
When you talk about the earnings and the revenue, we were just talking about it. How do you at some point here, you look at some of these revenue numbers. We were just talking about Palantir and NVIDIA, and Carl was mentioning that NVIDIA now on their balance sheet is putting notes on there about how much they're guaranteeing. And some of the this is nuts, and yet. We also have an election coming up, and we have an administration. They all do it. Is going to try everything. They don't want the market going down before November. So if you're sitting in my shoes or your shoes, you go, all right. Some stuff looks bad, but you got those guys to fight, and they got more money than you do. So it makes it very difficult.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what how else you can go about it, but that's where you are. And so what are you telling people? I mean, it's hard to look at individual stocks. I mean, because they're with this big brush. I mean, how do you tell somebody? I mean, we don't have a whole lot of people with Palantir. How do you tell somebody who's got to concentrate an issue there? They love the company. They've made a lot of money on it, but now it's $350 a share in revenue, and the thing's trading whatever. I mean, what do you say? I mean, because this has been a life changer for a lot of people, and most people, even though if you're in the business. Like you and me, if you know, back in the day when you didn't have ETFs or even futures, I mean S&P futures, if somebody wanted to, you know, if you let a moth out of your wallet and sent me like $2 million and we wanted to be diversified, we'd probably pick, you know, 20 stocks and we'd put $100,000 in every stock, right? I mean, maybe between the two of us, we'd pick the stocks. At the end of the year, we've got hopefully some big winners and some that didn't do as hot as we liked and some that didn't do anything. And what you really should do, I mean, if you want to be diversified, is lighten up on the winners and either pick some different ones or put more in the losers because it might be there a year or the next year. Well, that goes against the grain, right? I mean, you want to sell my winners and buy the losers? What the hell's the matter with you? I mean, so you end up, I mean, I've met a few guys like this in the last few years where their portfolio is only the winners. You know, it's only the Apples, it's only the NVIDIAs, it's only the Microsoft, because the other ones were losers. They kept, you know, they kept the ones rolling. I mean, Apple's been a life changer for how many people, for God's sake? I mean, there's people that bought the product, liked the product, were able to buy the stock at, what, $6 when the guy left? I mean, I'm not saying you should sell Apple, but if all of a sudden now Apple's 90% of your wealth, now what do you do? You know, it's a...
I mean, those questions individuals have to, you know, there's a lot of other factors that go into it. How old they are, where are they at in their retirement, do they have to send kids from college? Also, I'm not a financial advisor, so I'm not in that position to give people advice. I just, the only thing I can say is the rotation in this market is just incredible. And even today, you know, the jitters with what's going on in the Middle East, I look at a broad range of stocks and, well, yeah, tech's down, right? The banks aren't showing much life, but oil stocks are going up, staples are going up, some utilities are going up,
oil stocks,
some drug stocks are going up. So what you get, you just, like, there's never the knockout punch in this market. And so, and who am I to predict that the knockout punch is coming anytime soon? It just surely feels that way.
I would doubt it's going to come before the election. If it is, boy, it's going to be a problem.
Well, that's another thing. Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't even want to get into the political situation in the United States. I don't even want to get into, you know, the I mean, we could be on for another half hour and talk about the geopolitical situation. I mean, Russia's bombing the hell out of, you know, Kiev, you know. Xi's coming over here, but he's doing a whirlwind stop on the way in many other countries. I mean, you know, Israel, you know, I mean, there's hasn't been, you know, it's been quiet over there as far from what we hear. But that situation's, you know, far from being. And you know, the unrest in our country, the disagreements and, you know, in the political aisles, there's a clash coming up between the right and left and extreme right and extreme left. And the people that are in the middle are kind of left out in the dark.
They are, but there's also a chance that this election they're not being thought of. They might actually decide where it goes. It's the issue. It's the same as the Brexit. When the people that voted weren't the people that were talking. They just went and voted.
Yep, sir. Yep. Okay. Well, sorry to bring so much doom and gloom to your show today.
That's what I do for a living, and that's what you try and talk to people about all day. You're not giving people advice. You're just bringing up the questions, right?
Yep.
I mean, I never really thought that the Secretary of the Treasury would be a variable. Not saying it's right or wrong, but it now is a variable, correct?
Always dealing with something new in this market, Chief.
Yeah, and
I just one thing before I go. I mean, from a technical perspective, we're this pretty big day for the market. You know, after that big breakout, we've been We've been holding. You know, we made that new all-time high, and we've pulled back. Not violent breakouts or anything, you know, breakdowns or anything, but we are at a we are at last week's low. So you know how I like my daily highs and lows. So, and daily highs and lows turn into weekly highs and lows. So let's see what the bulls do. What the bulls do, and they come in and buy the dip. Okay, Chief.
What one quick question? When you do your technical stuff, which I know you do, where do you put this, like the Japanese yen and stuff? Because that I think is a big issue now. And
I mean, you don't want to try not to look at it. I mean, they bought the top, the intervention. I mean, it's horrible. I mean, you know, the long term effects of that's. I mean, we know what the long term effects are. So, the yen looks like it's going right back down to where it was.
Well, now, does that mean they're going to do it again? I guess is the question. What do you think?
I try not to think anymore, Chief. It pains me. I'm sure they will. I mean, it's coming back down. I mean, if that's the plan and the bond buying is the plan, then they're going to stick to it. That's what I think.
I wonder if they're going to use the euros this time or if they're going to use dollars.
Yeah. Well, go blue. Hopefully, I'll talk to you in an hour. A victory next week. Okay. Yeah. Talk to you, Chief. Bye bye.
Do we still have Carl? I think Kenny is out for 2 weeks. He's
you
in
do.
New
you do. You do.
Kenny's in New York.
He's, he's going to get yorked.
Yeah. Well, he still has all those connections with those people he used to be on the floor with, and he deserves it, for God's sake. You know.
Well, you know. Yeah. I think there's. Look. Here's basic. You and everybody else out there, okay? And I see a lot of comments like this on my forum as well. So you're in good company or bad company, depending on how you look at it, I suppose. Everyone believes that if anything, that these plates will stay in the air until November. Because, gee, there's an election.
I don't know that they're going to stay there. What I said was that they're going to try and keep them here a little bit.
Well, I heard what you said.
Yeah.
I'm telling you what everybody that's listening heard. Okay? Because the number of comments that I've seen on my forum among the people who have access with the ability to post public comments in places that are not open to those who are not system contributors. There's two sides to the forum. There's the one that everyone can read, and if you register for an account, there's a limited ability to make comments on those articles, which is the public stuff that I put out for everybody every day. And then there's people who decide that they want to essentially support independent journalism, support that, and there is an entire area of discussions that you have to be in that group in order to be able to get to them.
And that makes sense. Okay.
Well, it's like any other membership organization, right? Same basic idea, right? All right.
Like a country club.
Like a country club, right? I mean, if you want to have a drink at the bar, it's not just having the $5 for the drink.
Well, Groucho, would you ever be a member of a club that would have you?
Well, no, probably not, but there you go. But the thing that I hear a lot, and I've heard this, you know, I've been running this particular site now since before the 2008 crash. So it's not a new refrain by any stretch of the imagination.
Isn't it odd now that you have to name the year of the crash? We've had some.
Well, because there's been more than one, right?
Yeah, I always think of the crash as 87, but then again, I'm sure. I mean, anybody still alive that remembers 29?
Well, that's one of the reasons it happens. But what I have been pointing out to people is that, you know, in the last two, okay, I was completely out of so-called risk assets before the really big kaboom came, all right? And for the last year or so of that period of time, I had everyone I knew laughing at me. That they were, oh, you fool, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I told them, I said, look, I would rather sit here and suck down my ties having taken what I made doing whatever it was I was doing, whether I was, you know, running my internet company, whatever have you. I'd rather be sitting here doing that and be early on this. And you go ahead and you keep this, because I know exactly what you're going to do. I know what human psychology looks like. I know how this is going to play. You're going to get the first fairly significant sell-off, and everybody from Kramer to everyone else on CNBC and everyone on Fox Business and everyone else in all these other places is going to tell you stocks are on sale, buy them. Because you got a 10% discount. And when you go into the store and you see 10% off, 15% off, your inclination, if you like that particular thing, whatever it is to buy it because you got a deal. You got a bargain. Exactly wrong when the paradigm has shifted.
That happened in 29 as well.
Well, it most certainly did happen in 29 as well.
It was like April or May, right? I'll dig it out in the book. And you know, the floor was paralyzed, New York Stock Exchange floor. And guess who walked on the floor and actually made a buy and everybody charged in there and bought after him?
It was Morgan, wasn't it?
J. Pierpont Morgan himself walked onto the trading floor, probably still had a badge, borrowed one. They had a badge in those days. Walked up to whatever stock it was and bought shares. And everybody, if he's buying, we're all buying. They all piled in.
Yeah, but human psychology is what it is, right? Okay, and that's the thing is that you look at what do you think the Bessent play really was? It was that, right? It was a play on human psychology. It's not a play on fundamentals. It's not a play on it, because everybody knows that it has any kind of hint of intelligence in their head. Everyone knows that where we are today. By the way, Bessent just yesterday was out with another one of these things. Well, the only way we're getting out of this debt problem is to grow out of it. You can't grow out of it at this point because
there was a time when you could have, but not anymore.
Well, there was a time that you could have, but now the reality is you're going to have to accept the pain. You're going to have to restructure the places that have turned into parasitic drains on the American, and not just in America, but since we're in the United States and we all live in the United States and we all work here and we're all dealing with with our currency, and whether you like it or not.
Can you back you up a second? What Carl's talking about, this is the new mantra. Okay, if you're your dad or your grandfather, you would say, we're never going to be able to pay off this. You know, we want to pay off the debt. That's what debt means. It's something you're supposed to pay off. Well, then, the new mantra, younger than me, and that's we've talked about a bunch of times. And you know, roll with me for a second here. The new mantra is we got X number of debt. Well, of course, when people started saying this, we'd have 40 trillion. But say we had 20 trillion, and we're managing it. Okay, whatever the hell that means. We're managing it, and if Carl comes out with a tax thing or an infrastructure plan or whatever it is, the idea now is if we can grow the economy by 2% a year and our debt only grows by 1.9% a year, extend it out 30 years and we're okay. That was the mantra. That was the new Keynesian, the new whatever you want to call it. That's where the new monetary theorists, all those people, that was their shtick. And if you look back, even recently, you see Trump's first term when he put through the big tax increase. They didn't just put through the tax increase. They bowed to this new god of fiscal management, and they said over a period of 5 or 10 years, because these people are going to become so much more industrious because they're not paying as much taxes, they're going to do better stuff with it. We are going to end up net winners tax-wise on this bill, even though in the first year or two, it looks like we're giving tax breaks to people. And then you come with Joe Biden with the great infrastructure program. He didn't just say we're spending money on roads and whatever. He had a say. It had to go to the BS went to the Office of the Budget, and they said, wait a minute. What's going to happen is we're going to have 5G available in the worst neighborhood in Chicago, and in 10 years, because there's 5G available, all these people that, whatever, are on welfare now are going to get a job and they're going to start paying taxes. This will be incremental, and everybody buys this crap. And 2 years later, nobody goes back and checks and say, gee, Donald, looks to me like this tax, all we did was, and I'm all for lowering taxes, by the way, looks to me like we're lowering taxes, and I don't see much in the way of incremental stuff. And oh, by the way, Joe, I don't see that. You know, we fixed the road, but I don't see more taxes in because people can drive faster. So they're a slave to this BS. Sorry, Carl, but that's been the story, right? And you and I have never believed it.
Yes, but the fiscal results have not matched it.
Correct.
And then you had in I know you don't like me going after specific people, but you have to at sometimes because they do specific things. I laud people when they do smart stuff, and I excoriate them when they do stupid stuff. Okay. We currently have within the United States a labor workforce structure that has been deliberately degraded for reasons of cost to corporations. Right? It has not been improved for productivity to corporations. If it had been improved for productivity, we wouldn't be anywhere nearly as far into this hole as we are. Right? Because productivity really is the gift that gives twice. Right? It lowers people's cost of living because you get more for each element of effort that you put in. So that's the definition
like cutting the grass with a lawnmower or without. Yeah.
Well, Chief, that's the definition of productivity is doing more with less. Okay.
Right.
So, I mean, that's it really is the gift that gives twice. But one of the things that Obama did, just one of the many, okay, and by the way, Biden expanded this, which made it even worse. Obama, by executive order, without an act of Congress, totally flatly illegal, the two things, one of which I've talked about many times on this show and elsewhere, which is the whole Dreamer thing. Okay, we're going to let all these illegal immigrant children in here. And oh, by the way, even though I have no authority under statutory law, I'm going to give them effective amnesty. Now, the whole concept behind this is to flood the zone to the point that you couldn't bring all these cases through a courtroom and eject all these people because there aren't enough judges, there aren't enough courts, and there aren't enough hours in the day. And so if you bring in 5 million people and do this, and you know you can only process and eject 100,000 of them a year.
You've got me in agreement with you.
Well, now hold on.
And the upper end of this.
Well, now hold on.
Yeah.
It got worse, okay? Because the Dreamers, at least, the de minimis argument for it is they went through the American educational system because they came here as children, all right? And to the extent that they all had a reasonably coherent mental capacity, an intellectual capacity, and somehow adjusted to the American views of culture.
Well, plus, we made an investment in them, for God's sake.
Well, okay, but guess what? That you can, I can make an investment in a rock, and it doesn't turn into something valuable. Okay. Point being, assuming that the material is there in the clay to mold, that you can make an argument for this, all right? But what Obama also did at the same time, which nobody wants to talk about, is he created this thing called EAD. EAD is work authorization for dependent spouses and partners of people who are here on H-1s, typically on an H-4. An H-4 visa is a non-immigrant visa, does not have a right of conversion. It's attached and it is for dependent spouses. And EAD gave them the ability to work. So you have all these people who were brought in here, most under fraudulent pretense on H-1s. The vast majority of the people who are here on H-1s are in fact here under fraudulent pretense. It's not that they can't do the job. It's that the law requires...
Elon Musk was here on fraudulent pretense.
I don't care how many people are the example from one side of the aisle or the other. They all need to leave, every one of them.
Well,
all right?
Yeah, but that's not...
Now, here's... Well, hold on a minute. But the H-4 EAD made it 100 times worse because now you have a person who comes in here, brings their wife, or sometimes...
Gee, imagine that, somebody bringing her wife.
Well, gee, except now she can work. And she has forged credentials.
But she also wants to work, which a lot of people here don't.
Okay, she wants to work, but now she throws another American out of a job.
Yeah, that's the part that you and I disagree on. I don't think Americans want the job.
Excuse me, they don't want the job when picking strawberries pays $5 a day. You're telling me that all of these people... Now, wait a minute, Chief. Now, hold on.
I'm willing to roll with you on the part where we bring people over and we, on the high end, and we set their prices less than people that graduated college here.
Not just less than that, but less than the ability to pay the debt that they took on the premise that there were $100,000 a year jobs waiting for them.
I understand that, but we're not going to go anywhere with this because the idea of that we're throwing people out again. I mean, we got 110.
Chief, there's 10 million of those Americans who are unemployed or pulling coffees right now because of what we've done here. By the way, the corporations love this, but if you want to solve the issue of houses being $500,000, if you throw them out, that demand disappears and the price will fall.
I'm with you on the high-end stuff, but now that we have managed to kick everybody out of the Home Depot parking lot, I don't see a lot of middle-class and upper-class people's kids there looking for a job in the afternoon. I see nobody there.
You know, isn't it astounding that so you're telling me nobody's putting roofs on in Chicago?
There's a lot of roofing companies, and I know who they all are.
Uh huh.
And some of them have citizens, and some don't. But right, a lot of them do. But some of the citizens here, you say, shouldn't even be citizens.
Wait a minute. Are they here legally? Did they come into the United States legitimately and are citizens of the United States?
I think a lot of them are.
Well, then what's the problem?
You're going to say they weren't here legitimately in the first place. Maybe their parents weren't citizens and they were born here.
Hold on a minute. You've got a person who is, you know, somehow, you being a freedman, you having gone to school and understood basics of economics, all of a sudden you leave it at the door as soon as someone talks about supply and demand.
No, I'm not.
When it comes to the labor market and to consumer goods. And yet at the same time you say, but people can't afford a house, they can't afford groceries, they can't afford
that. Well,
guess what? Supply and demand is the first law of economics, and no one will ever be able to repeal it.
If we kick every Hispanic in Chicago out of the roofing business, it just means the roof went from 100,000 to 400,000 because you can't find anybody.
No, it doesn't mean that.
Okay.
No, it doesn't. You know what? I heard that same bullshit about strawberries years ago.
The point is,
it was a lie then, it's a lie now.
I don't want everybody pouring across the border, but the people... I had this long conversation. This was not Hispanic people for a while. It was a lot of Russians, believe it or not. When I first moved into my neighborhood, all of a sudden everybody decided to get a hair up there behind and remodel in just 1 week, right? Or 1 year. And all these guys out there are... I'm talking to a couple of them. And they're all Russian. I don't think too many Russians are getting over here, but they're all Russian. The guy says to me,
right now they're not.
No, and the guy says to me, everybody says that we're taking somebody else's job. He goes, I'm making union scale. He goes, if three American white guys or black guys show up and want my job tomorrow, I'm gone. They want me in England, but nobody's here. I don't see anybody wanting to do this. The guy put up an ad for carpenters, and guess what? Five of us showed up. There was nobody else there. He goes, "We're making union scale. We're not doing $5 an hour." And oh, by the way, they're paying more in London. If you want to kick me out, kick me out. So I mean, I'm saying if you want to work here and you have a skill, There's a million parts of this. When you've told me about this stuff on the upper end, I'm with you, Carl. I'm appalled at that you can bring somebody in here from China or India at 75 grand when the going rate's 100. And by the way, the guy can't walk down the block and get the other job. That to me is like the minor league baseball draft, for God's sake. I mean, I don't know how that goes on.
Well, Chief, what's even worse with this is that once this gets going in a business. Okay, and these people get into management positions. The nepotism, that sort of racial preference is illegal in the United States, right? Or at least it's supposed to be. I won't hire someone because they're black. That's against the law. Christ, that was against the law when I was running MCS.
When it comes to money, though, Carl, if the people who are willing to come over here and work for half the money or two-thirds of the money in those businesses, if they're from Austria, nobody cares if they're white, black, or blue. I mean, as long as you get somebody cheaper.
Except that's not... All right. You know what? You clearly have not been paying attention to this.
I understand where they're coming from. Okay.
Because that's not true in today's world.
Well, okay, but it used to be the Irish. Then it was the Chinese. It was the Chinese, right? We did it to those guys. We did it to the Japanese.
All I'm pointing out is that is absolutely not the case with what's going on. You take a look at, as just one of many examples, you look at the software engineers. These are all high-paying $100,000 a year jobs.
Yeah.
You look at the rotation out of those jobs of Americans, people who speak English, and you go into an interview or you go into work with one of those people, they're all speaking Hindi. And by the way, you don't. And therefore, you can't possibly, you can't be a part of that team because you can't understand what the hell they're saying.
It is interesting that the Indian people have stepped into where we kicked the Chinese out, right?
Well, but you know what? It is coordinated, it is intentional, and it is illegal under U.S. law to racially discriminate in that kind of a fashion, and it goes in every single tech company today, all of them. And it's all the way up to the CEOs of many of these
companies.
When
are we going to... We probably have Hal someplace.
He's here.
I'm here.
We know what I'm waiting for on this, though, is for somebody to say all the CEOs in Japan and India make 300 grand a year and all the ones here make 10 mil. Why don't we bring some of those guys over here? You think that's going to go? That'd be like a fart in church, wouldn't it?
Oh, you know what? Well, that might solve some of the problems, right? I'm gonna let Hal have his time.
Yeah, we're gonna say I don't care who the guy is. It's pounding the nails. If he's gonna work for cheaper, I want that guy. Now, wait a minute. We got a CEO that says he'll work for cheaper. I don't want to hear that.
Well, there you go. Let me just leave.
Yeah, we need free immigration in the form of CEOs, right?
Yeah,
yeah. There you go. Let me just leave one thing out here for everybody. If people believe that this is just, another one of these buy the dip, start the thing. Pay attention. If you're gonna go ahead and try to chase that sort of a thing, just be aware that when these kinds of things get going in the market, everybody piles in thinking that's the case, and then the next leg comes, and it's not the direction you think it's going to be.
You know that's not me, but if every morning when I'm walking in, somebody runs out with a boot and kicks me in the ass, the next morning I'm looking around where that shoe's coming from. And that's what these guys have been doing to us for a long time.
Yeah, see, well, you know what? You've got a brain in your head, and you've seen this movie before. Most of the people out there don't.
I mean, I don't think you're not giving investment advice, but you could because you're not registered. But you're not advising everybody because the world looks bad to buy a gazillion puts and go on a vacation. I mean, you're not, because a lot of weird stuff is happening.
Oh, good God, no. And that's, and on top of that, I mean, I've looked at some of these spreads and I've looked at some of these things during earnings announcements, and I don't like the implieds. And so I'm like, all right, I don't see a play here.
Duh, the price of insurance is high because it ought to be.
Well, exactly. I mean, if the price of insurance
is high because it's not insurance.
Well, sure the price is. Of it, if the price of insurance is high because the Ring camera sees a guy standing outside your house with a can of gasoline, a beer bottle, and a piece of T-shirt stuck in it.
Well, hang for a quick second. I want to ask both of you guys this question. When let's say, some people think we're at a market top. Let's say we are. We're pretty much at a record. Well, not today because we're down a bunch, but let's say we are. Virtually every other top, there's been a few, but certainly in 87, I mean, people were wearing pins saying "Say no to puts." If there had been a VIX, there wasn't. Well, VIX is nothing more than the implied volatility going forward. Right. But so you could go back and recalculate. If there had been a VIX, it would have been like 8.5 or 9.
No, I know.
That's how cheap puts got to be, and everybody was selling covered calls. And those that don't know, there's a you can't say the puts are expensive and the calls are cheap, because that means stuff is mispriced. There's a relationship between the calls and the puts. So if the call prices are down, the put prices are down, because you can manufacture. I mean, if somebody comes in and buys a put from me, Okay, so I sell him the put. Well, what can I do? I can buy a call and sell stock. That's an artificial put. I just created a put. I don't want to go into that too deeply, but there's a relationship between long put, long stock is the same as a call.
Right.
Long call, short stock is the same as a put. So there's an identity there. So you can't say the puts are expensive and the calls are cheap, because that would give guys like me an amazing opportunity to make money.
And you make a hell of a lot.
Not a lot of money. So that's not what's happening. So in 87, it was real cheap. In 2007, that's how PTI Securities became Money Manager of the Year. The price of the puts was so cheap that when people were giving me money to put in the protected index program, I said, Danny, these puts are so cheap. If a guy wants to buy 1,000 shares of this, instead of buying 10 puts, I'm going to buy 15.
Right.
And I did, because they were so cheap. And then all of a sudden, the market...
I'll tell you what, FINRA margin debt is really starting to accelerate, and I think the S&P 500 is going to respond in kind.
Well, since you brought that up, I'm looking at the numbers. You know, they don't have an August number yet, but this is weird. In April, the FINRA margin debt was $1.3 trillion. May, it went to $1.415 trillion. June, it went to $1.5 trillion. But now last month, it came back to $1.417 trillion. Was that June number a bad one, or how did we have that big spike and come right back down? We're still real high at 1.4. Yeah. We went up 80.
I was looking
billion.
At the ratios.
Yeah. What they're high. But yeah. You know what I'm saying is, this time, if it is a top, the price of puts, which means the price to protect your position, you know, you want to call it insurance, but the fact is, it's very high. And when these are conversations I have with clients all day long. I mean, somebody will bring me, you know, a whole bunch of, you know, pick a stock, Google or whatever the hell it is. It could be, we don't have a lot of NVIDIA, but have some. And you say, well, you know, at your age, let's say you're 80 or 90, who the hell knows, and by the way, you've got a $5 million portfolio and 4999 of it is in NVIDIA, well, you know, maybe we should think about protecting this, you know. But now if somebody has 100 shares of NVIDIA and they're 30 years old, you say, hey, you go, you know, what the hell's the difference? But everybody, anyway, these are conversations they have all day. And they're going to say, how much are those puts cost? Well, they're up there. They're up there for a reason, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, why they were so cheap in 87 and why they were so cheap in 2007, I have no idea. But people have an idea that when the market is higher, you less want to protect it than when it's lower. And that's exactly the opposite, right? It should cost you more to protect your car when it's new than 2 years later, right?
Yeah. Well, I think Bitcoin is going to accelerate too.
Which way?
I honestly think, given how expensive it was for foreigners to come to the United States to go to those FIFA soccer matches and spend a month in the United States in, I don't know, $200 or $300 hotels in some of these cities, I actually think that...
You want to go higher than that, you know. They're not trying to...
Well, I haven't checked in a hotel in a while, so I usually check in. I usually, when I get a hotel, I surf the internet until I find something on Priceline.com or...
Yes, because you're good at this.
That's $100 a night,
what
right?
Do you think the average price is in Chicago? Ricky,
yeah, I don't even know.
I'm going to bet four. But Ricky,
I'm a 1,000-click shopper on the internet, so my expectation is much lower than what it probably actually is. Much, much lower. So, but that cave in on Bitcoin happened at the end of last year, you know, 6 months before the soccer matches start. So I would not be surprised if people 6 months before they're planning to be in the United States were selling off a bunch of their Bitcoin to finance these trips. I would not be shocked by that at all. Because that is a big deal. In America, soccer is not a big deal. Football's a big deal, but, you know, I don't think we're anywhere near as rabid in football and basketball as foreigners are with respect to soccer. Soccer is the center of the world for a lot of these fans, a lot of these people from other countries, especially in Europe. So I'm just saying, I would not be shocked if Bitcoin was sold to finance these trips to watch the games in America, because it was freaking expensive, man.
Average four-star hotel in New York, $424.
Yeah, yeah.
But now where you would like to stay, the five-star
and
luxury,
you know, those
is 550.
Those fans are here for a month, too, Tom. They were here for a month.
You know what, we had when our friend Mike Murphy was in. How could you possibly have been? Mike did a, you know, Jimmy Lawler. if the worst, I think, was the UK. If you came for the month, you couldn't drive because they started out in Mexico City. Then I think they went to Seattle, and they went some other place,
yeah.
Atlanta.
Yeah.
It was, I think it was, what did he tell me? It was, how many thousand miles? Like 12,000 miles or something. I mean, you had to be wow. here in like five different cities.
I don't know how you do that. You know, I don't know how you do that unless you sell something.
Well, the people that caught a break, I think were the, Ricky, help us out here. Was it Scotland or somebody? There were the guys that supposedly drank Boston Dry.
Scotland.
But those guys caught a break because I think they had, it's off the top of my head, Ricky, help me here. I think they had one game in New York, one in Boston, and like one in Toronto. I mean, they were reasonably close where you could get from place to place. It wasn't like Mexico City, Seattle, Atlanta, or something like UK had or something like that. Anyway, I don't know. My question is, I'm not dodging you here. I don't know if anybody really spent the whole month. I think they came for the first round as best they could, and then I think the other people.
I don't know.
Came
those Norwegian fans and the Scottish fans seem like they were here for.
But they didn't make it out of the first round. The question is, would they still have been here for the finals? Yeah.
They were doing their rowing thing. Poof.
Yeah.
Poof. They're doing that all over the freaking United States, man. They were doing it in Miami. They were doing it in New York. They were doing it in football stadiums before baseball games. I mean, they were invited to do this everywhere.
Well, yeah, I said some teams really had to travel from game to game. Others yeah. caught it a little better. Somebody, I think, was right near L.A. for the first three games.
Yeah.
And anyway, but it would have been a long month. You're right about that.
I just think with the hotel prices, the Airbnb prices, the airline prices, gasoline prices, you know, I don't understand how people can spend that kind of money on a sports tournament that lasts about a month unless they've sold an asset. I don't understand it.
Well, how many people spend, you know what it costs to go to these professional football games?
Yeah. I know. I don't know how they do it.
I have a friend. Had an acquaintance.
I'm on vetpicks.com trying to find a. I'm hoping this is really sad. I'm hoping the Carolina Panthers kind of tank their season at the beginning, so that all those season ticket holders donate their season tickets to vetpicks.com, so I can take my family.
God.
The game to Charlotte.
Let the moth out of the wallet, for God's sake! You're a professor.
Yeah, but I got four kids, and one's going to be in college next year. So.
God. Well, we were talking earlier, I mean, about a lot of these.
Professors outside of the University of Chicago, Yale, and Princeton, Harvard, and don't make very much money, Tom.
What does a fully endowed professor make now at one of these schools?
Well, you know, Chicago, you know, or St. Louis, what is it, Washington University? Washington University spends a lot of money on salaries. They'll bring a top name economist in from like Berkeley or maybe, I don't know, Harvard or Yale for about 4 or 5 years at a salary that I can't even imagine. I don't even know. I don't even run in those circles, so I can't even guess.
Well, if
it's a private school, you can't know.
Well, let's say a guy like Carl wants to endow a professorship for the next 20 years. What's...
Well, it depends on who he endows. If he endows some guy that's written a book that sold 10,000 copies, he could probably do it for $100,000.
Well, the University of Chicago...
But if he won a Nobel Prize, it's probably going to take $500,000.
Well, at the University of Chicago, they endow a professorship, and then they hire the guy for the professorship, and they do it the other way around. They've been doing it
Walter
forever.
Walter Williams was endowed at George Mason, and I think he said he was making about $200,000 a year. And, you know, the only thing I've ever really disagreed with Walter Williams about is that he said in an interview that professors are underworked and overpaid. And I'm thinking, yeah, if you have an endowed chair, you are. But if you're teaching four classes a semester at a state university, you're overworked and underpaid. I'm telling you.
Well,
I work about 15 hours a day. But I love it. I love it, so I don't mind.
Well, the guy's one of the... Before Hal, we used to have a guest on the show, a gentleman named Bob Golden, one of our 10 compadres that graduated Notre Dame together, and he unfortunately passed, but he was a CPA/lawyer, that did a lot of international tax stuff. You know, he was one of the, he was the designer, but he was right there for like the double Dutch sandwich. And he specialized in taking all these people overseas, right, to not pay us on taxes, right?
Yeah, transfer pricing. My buddy Dan, I graduated with him at Washington State. He actually wrote, I think, the first of two chapters of a transfer pricing economics book. He's now like a partner or whatnot at
Bob was,
PricewaterhouseCooper in Boston.
I think that's maybe where he was, but one of those things, either PW or who's the other guy? One of the five or six that are left. And so he decides he's going to become a professor at Notre Dame as an adjunct professor, right? So he tells me. Yeah, he says they're paying him nothing, like 15 grand or something.
Yeah, it's not much at all.
So he's going to give this class in international taxation, which, you know, he's probably one of 20 people in the world that could even teach, right?
Yeah.
So he tells me, Tommy, it takes me all summer because there's no textbook. There's no nothing.
You got to come up with yourself.
Because it takes me all summer.
Well, I don't even use the textbooks, Tom.
Well, I mean, he said it took me all summer to go through all the regs, all the deals I've done, all the different stuff, to essentially create a course. And the course itself had to be worth like a fortune. And he says he's got, this is when they were doing the, I don't know if they still do it, but if you teach the class at Notre Dame, they used to have it in a lot of schools, I think maybe still do. There were several, like, I'll use the term shopping center storefronts. One was in Schaumburg, and I don't know where the other one was. And they say they maybe had five or six of these satellite places for the grad school. And there'd be, you know, and the companies are paying for them. You know, so there are 20 people that show up on it every night, and only 20 or 25 people, depending on, and they're getting their grad class. I think they had to go to school for a week, you know, in September. You had to spend a week on campus, then you did this for the rest of the year so you could be with your family. So Pap says to me, I think they have like 80 people taking this class at like $4,500 a pop, and they're paying me 15 grand. He goes, plus all summer it took me to put it together where they gave me nothing. Yeah. He goes, there's a deal. I go,
yeah, adjuncting is not.
He goes, but I like my football tickets, and I like the fact that I could park it in the faculty lot for the football game. Plus, I love the place, so I do it. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Then.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, in New York City, you know, you look at a typical economics department, not at like NYU or Columbia, but just at a typical state or city university. And adjuncts probably teach 70% of the courses. So if you're an adjunct in New York City, you probably have to take on, to even live there, you're probably teaching 10 courses a semester, I would suspect, to be able to live in New York City. You know, in
aren't those guys
Utah,
trying to, aren't they trying to unionize, adjunct guys?
Yeah, they are unionized, I think, in New York City. I was part of the union when I was teaching a couple courses at Mercy University when I was chairing the business department at that Christian university that closed a year after they hired me. But, you know, in Utah or North Carolina, the economics departments are really big. We had what, five or six people at a small liberal arts college at Westminster University in Utah? And then we have, I don't know, 15, 10 to 15, maybe 15 here at North Carolina, depends on, you know, what decade or year it is or whatever. But we have about 15, I think, here. The equivalent department at a state university in New York City is probably going to have maybe three or four, and the rest are adjuncts. And honestly, I don't know how they get accreditation when they have so many adjuncts teaching all those courses. But I think it's just because it just costs so much in that city.
Well, but you also charge so much.
Yeah.
I think they're doing
well, the state universities and the city universities of New York, they're free tuition to people who make under like $200,000 a year, households that make under $200,000.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, a problem with that free tuition is, and I pointed this out when I was living there, a problem with that tuition is that it creates a magical or artificial demand for a computer science class. So if your computer science classes are filled up because of this really low tuition, it doesn't discipline you in a market sense as a professor, because you see your classes are filled and you've been teaching the same C++ for 30 years. You don't have any incentive to switch to something like Python or R. You continue teaching in that you know, program language in the 1990s. So that's one of the problems with zero price tuition.
Well,
it creates an artificial demand for your services, so you feel like, well, I'm in high demand. I don't have to be innovative. And then I was talking to.
Most of your entry level, yeah. You're like macro or micro economics. They never use the same book. I mean, I could teach one of those.
But there's different qualities when it comes to instructional method.
If you're
an adjunct making $3,000 for the course, and there's 200 people in there, you don't really have to be engaging or entertaining or provide really any kind of instructional value. You don't have to be. And so, because you feel like, oh, your service is in high demand. Whereas at a private liberal arts college that is struggling to stay alive, and there's pressure on professors not to give away A's, but to make sure that students have an awesome, engaging, two-way conversation and classroom discussions where they feel like they're being mentored at the same time they're offered all this knowledge. There's a different kind of pressure. And when I was at Westminster, I got really innovative in my teaching, and it spilled over, and I think it's had positive effects on the quality of instruction I'm doing now at a state university, North Carolina A&T State University in Greensboro. My classes are in high demand, but it's not because it's easy. It's not because they can game it on AI. I think it's because I figured out the secret sauce on how to create a fun, engaging, project-based learning system.
Well, plus they can knock you off topic.
That is innovation. That's innovation. That comes from, you know, scarcity of fear of the school closing down and making sure that students are having this awesome experience.
Part of it's scarcity. Part of it's scarcity. Part of it's just the way you are.
Yeah, part of it's the way I am. I'm just wired in a way where I'm like John Nash's character, the character John Nash in the movie, A Beautiful Mind,
yep.
Where he walks into the class and he throws a textbook in the garbage. Well,
So you're saying that if somebody was teaching basic options 101, they'd rather have me than some guy just teaching them basic options 101.
I think the kids today would really love to take a class from the guy you're talking about with regard to accounting and finance and these transfer pricing models, or you when it comes to the trading floor. I think they would rather have that. I honestly do, because you have stories, you have experience, you have intuition. You can explain it in a way that doesn't require any high-level mathematics or language.
Well, Bob had one of the greatest comments ever. It was just a while back when guys were making less. I go, Bob, how the hell do you, when you're running some of this crap, and it is crap, transfer pricing by the IRS. I said, how do you keep a straight face? These guys are morons. They should never have let this stuff go through. And he says to me, Tom, it's $650 an hour. You learn how to keep a straight face. Well, now that's probably $2,000 an hour, but he goes, you learn how to keep a straight face. I go, how do these guys buy this crap? He goes, because they're idiots.
Yeah.
how do you walk through the IRS that, I think it was Starbucks, I'm not sure, had how many hundred stores in London, yet all their profits were in Amsterdam when they had, you know, 10 stores. He goes, they're idiots. Or they're getting paid off, one or the other.
Well, I put a video of Leslie Stahl doing a transfer pricing segment with a Democratic congressman from Texas, and I put it on my YouTube channel. It's probably still there, because I used to refer to it a lot when I taught in person at Westminster, you know, 10 years ago. And it shows a politician talking about firms who put a piece of paper in a Zug Switzerland mailbox in some conference room that they're never going to be in. He says that's wrong, and that any firm that does that, he's going to like tax them or something like that. Just that segment alone where he says that out loud caused one or two companies in Texas to literally move their management team to Switzerland. So these politicians are not the brightest.
He never came on the show. He worked for he's retired from the Fed. So yeah. I'll say Robert S. I don't know. You might have met him the night you were here at Ceres, but
oh, really? Okay.
Okay, looks like Hemingway. The beard and everything.
Oh, really?
Yeah, anyway,
it's been a long time. The triplets were like one and a half of that.
Yeah, he was he was one of these guys that was involved in the international. Interesting dude. He's got a, I think he's an economics degree and a law degree. And he was a policeman in Long Island at one point.
Oh, man, the stories he could tell and interweave in his lessons would be really valuable by students, I think.
One night I think he had to give Farrah Fawcett a ride in a squad car because a limo broke down or something.
Oh, man, that would have been... She was my seventh
friend. Not Farrah Fawcett. It was the one who was in Bonnie and Clyde.
Faye Dunaway?
Faye Dunaway.
So by the way, that's a really good movie.
Oh, God, yeah.
I watched it about 2 months ago.
Well, he
stands up.
He was one of these guys that at the Fed, and people always badmouth the Fed because you look at their policy, but the actual workings of the stuff they do and some of the advancements, that appears with the guy. One of the advancements was because of what they did with the bank regulation, maybe just talking out of school, but was that the, banks, well, I don't know what your definition of a bank is, but like the clearing firms couldn't just deposit like $300-400 million in a bank at night. So, and I go, why is that? He said, well, because the new rules are that's considered fast money. It's liable to leave the next day. So the bank, you actually needed like Jamie Dimon's signature to drop it in the bank. So let me get this straight. Banks won't take money and they don't like to give loans. What exactly does a bank do if they don't? What's left? So anyway, he and a few other guys pioneered an idea that the clearing firms, OCC Clearing and New York, was it DTC, that they have a direct line into the Fed, where if they have like $2 billion at night excess, that they can go right into the Fed with the money, and not have to go through a bank, and the bank goes through a hissy fit about, what do we got to do? We got to sign this, sign that, because now all of a sudden we got all this fast money. So anyway, he goes to Washington to testify in front of this committee. So he sends me the video. And I go, first of all, I go, Robert, who the hell sold you?
I can just imagine.
He goes, I said, who the hell sold you the Undertaker suit? It looked like you're laying somebody out. So of course, I'm giving him no other shit about his suit. He got the black suit with the white shirt and everything. So he's talking, there's nobody around him. More time you see there, the guy's got 15 attorneys behind him and everything. It's this big group.
Yeah.
He's sitting there by himself.
That kind of reminds me of the movie the Bourne series, where the guy that runs the program is behind closed doors, and he's testifying by himself in an empty room to about eight people on the committee.
Yeah, well, he's sitting there out in the middle of the room, and there's nobody there, the whole middle of the thing except him. So he goes, and all these guys are like quizzing him, and I go, Robert, did anybody have any idea what you're talking about? Was he talking about settlements and overseas and all this? He goes, the chairman of the committee had some idea, and his staffer knew what I was there for. He goes, everybody else is just answering these questions. They had no idea of how this settled in Europe and blah, blah, blah.
Most of the things are produced for TV, and they're just reading. They're reading a script, those politicians. You look at them, they're just reading them. There's actually no conversation going on. There's no exchange of ideas. It's just one person reading one thing, and the guy giving the testimony reading his testimony for the most part.
Well, they're asking
and Robert, there's actually no conversation there.
Well, Robert's actually giving him gritty detail of international settlements and stuff.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine his testimony was actually really awesome. Yeah.
But I was giving him no under grief about what he was wearing. Where'd you get that tie?
Well, my opinion of politicians really got real when Dee Snider from Twisted Sister, the lead singer...
Hey, hold the thought on that. We got to go to break. We haven't had one yet.
Okay.
SP Futures now down 49. We're moving south here, so we better have a break. NASDAQ Futures down 359. We got everything down here this morning. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Low and roll pick, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamara Rickey on the board. SP Futures down 51 now. NASDAQ Futures down 371. The big news is we're fighting again in Iran. We've got oil prices to the moon here. And we've got the 10-year higher now than when Secretary of the Treasury interceded. So I don't know what that means necessarily. But Dow futures are down 339. Individual stocks, we got Caterpillar, which goes up and down every day, down $12. We've got Google down 343. We got Microsoft down 634. So everything is. Tesla, which had a huge run up yesterday, is down 467 today. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 239. That's 0.9%. We got the FTSE down 60.6%. Kick around, not much, though. They're only down 16.2%, so they're not exactly following here. We got the Nikkei down only 96.1%. Hang Seng down 237.9%. And we've got Shanghai down. So this is interesting because last night when I looked, we're actually up a little bit. So now we've got a big turnaround here. Bonds, this is kind of the big news. 10-year 4.79, which is the the highest we've had since 2025, and it's higher than when Bessin started buying the long end. So that's somewhat of an issue. The 30-year is up 0.22, 5.27. This has been like a 2 or 3 day run in this stuff, so this is not good for what people want to see. Oil up 205, 87.81. Brent up 173, 92.22. RBOB up 3 cents, 4 cents. Make that 311. So you're probably well into the low fours when you're buying gas. We've got gold, whack down $58, 44.23. Silver down $1.60, 64.82. With foreign exchange, and this is the key one. The Japanese yen is back over 160, which is kind of their worrisome point. Not as high as the 163 when Bessent intervened there and drove it down to 167, but now it's back up into the middle there. The pound is like one, or euro is like 116, and the pound's 135, so they're kind of steady. Crypto down $1,200, 77,803, so kind of down from the 82,000 in the last week. A lot of stuff there. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:38 here in Chicago. We're looking at 78 degrees right now with a high of 92. Hot and humid with some sun, and tonight will be mainly clear and remains very warm and humid with a low of 77 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 80 degrees right now with a high of 101. Partly sunny with a thunderstorm around this afternoon. Tonight will be clear with a low of 84 degrees. Traffic in Chicago is looking pretty bad right now. Inbound Kennedy from Monroe is 32 minutes. We're looking at 53 minutes for Edens from Link Cook. Eisenhower from Wolf is another 53 minutes. Then Ryan from 95th, 33 minutes. And lastly, inbound Stevenson from 294 is 37 minutes. Lastly, sports. Yesterday, Cubs beat Brewers 17-3, but Sox lose to Astros 6-3, and Diamondbacks lose to Felix 2-1. Today we got Brewers at Cubs 6:40 p.m., Sox at Astros 7:10 p.m., and Phillies at Diamondbacks 8:40 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief. Back to you.
So Hal, we got and the the world that we see it when you look at the market. What now for me? I had a long conversation with Carl about it. For me, for what I do, I'm an investment advisor. I've got people in the protected index program. I've got people who are doing individual stock stuff. We've got. For every client, there's a story, right? I mean, that's the way we do business, which is not the way other people do business, which makes it, more challenging instead of just saying everybody's the same person, but also makes it more rewarding. For the market looks kind of crappy here. We've seen these interest rates creep up. So you would like to be pretty protected, yet you know that somebody's going to do something that's going to drive us at least for a day or two the opposite direction. You see these rates with the inflation expectations, or not expectations, you're looking right in front of your face, you're seeing it. You see these long-term yields that are probably still a little too low if you put a regular inflation rate in there. You see the difference in wealth where the people who have been able to borrow for less than the rate of inflation, and I'll include mortgages in there. If you got a 3% mortgage, it's less than the rate of inflation on a house. If to a large extent, stock margin loans have been less than the appreciation of the market. Certainly big companies can be able to borrow for ball teams and stuff for less than the rate of inflation, which leaves the rest of us borrowing on credit cards, which is way more than the rate of inflation. So that, in my opinion, Hal, and I'm just lobbing one out there, is one of the biggest reasons why you have this disparity in wealth in people. And so now what, you have a market that by any stretch is a little high, or maybe more than a little high by any normal revenue per share, earnings per share stuff. Doesn't mean that that's, you're going to go flying down today. Hopefully we don't. We also have these interest rates, which appear to be on the rise. Not appear to be. If you're looking at them every day, they're on the rise. You know they're going to try and do something to stop that, yet you also know that that seems to be the direction we're heading. As you, you know, an economist can dig into the detail of this and not just worried about people's portfolio like me, is there anything I can conclude here, or is it just wait and see, or it's a mess? What is it?
Well, for me, I'm trying to just hang on to our properties in Utah. And I got to get this thing rented, but I also have to upkeep it to keep attracting clients. And if I can hang on to my properties, then I'm going to beat inflation. So I'm trying to mimic
In the last 15 years, you've been able to do that. But what makes you think the next 10 or 15 you'll be able to do that?
Yeah, I don't know. With my kids going to school, getting ready to go to college, I'm not sure what we're going to do. But we've been seriously squeezed. And, you know, a lot of the squeeze has become as a result of these banking rule changes that coincidentally happened during the first month of lockdown, where they changed the banking rules and limited the reserve requirements. And that's why you see all this money flowing into margin debt. And people use that margin debt to buy, you know, assets. You know, people leverage. Elon Musk didn't buy Twitter with cash.
Right.
Billionaires don't have cash. If billionaires want to buy something with cash or pay a tax with cash, they have to liquidate their assets. They're a billionaire because they don't have cash. They're a billionaire because all their money is tied up in investments. And if those investments go up, they become wealthier. So they don't have cash. So how did Elon Musk purchase Twitter? Well, he cobbled together a loan to buy it. That's what he did. And that's how, if you use...
But he didn't pay 25%.
He wasn't paying 25%, no. He's probably paying an interest rate that's less than the rate of inflation. And I have the rate of inflation pegged around 6% over the last 25 years. M2's been growing at in a smooth geometric average since the year 2000.
I think if you were to adjust, if you look at their numbers, okay, and if you kick up...
You got to double their numbers.
Well, I think...
I think those numbers are lying.
I think they are too, but I think there's two spots that I would... I mean, after I just did some stuff here the other day on... The two spots, obviously, I think, may not be obvious to everybody else, two spots are the flat-ass lies. One is medical stuff, by making that.
Yep.
And they're not so much lying on the increase in medical stuff. I think they're lying on that, too, but not as bad. The lie comes
from... They're not technically lying. They're just not computing correctly.
Well, it's...
You look at the medical component of the CPI, well, you say, it's just ridiculously
stupid. What's I'm saying, but bearing false witness is
and
a lie.
And then the housing component's ridiculously stupid, too.
All right, well, what we're trying to say here is that I'm saying there's two pieces to the medical piece. One piece is, if you look at, by the way, you can go to the Fred of St. Louis, and they'll break out every piece of the CPI for you.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So if you go back to 2000 and you look at the increase in medical expenses, that's a little light. I wouldn't call it a lie. I will call it a lie, but that say they've got it up, you know, 100% since then, or 110%, when we all could probably say it's up, you know, 200 or 300%. You know, a pill in a hospital or an emergency room visit or something is probably up that much. Now that's only one piece of it. The other part of the CPI is what percentage of your basket is the medical piece.
Yeah.
And they say it's 6.5%, and I'm going to say that I know people where it's like 40, but the idea...
Well, I've been blessed. My family is rarely sick. Yeah. We're rarely sick. I'm rarely... Well, I have the VA. The VA is awesome. I love the VA.
Well, but...
So we're rarely sick, so we don't really use our insurance much.
Well, just look at what it is of the economy. It's 21% of the economy. So it can't be only 6% of everybody's basket. So let's...
Well, that's the problem with these aggregates.
Yeah.
For older people, it's not 6%. For younger people, it's not 6%, right? I don't even think 6% even gets close for older people.
Well, okay.
And the funny thing is, I'm older now.
Yeah, but what? It's like any problem.
When you have three kids in seventh grade, and you're in your late 50s, I don't consider myself a 50-year-old. I actually feel like I'm in my 30s or 40s because I have such young kids. And so it's really hard for me to imagine that I'm 57 because I feel like I haven't
look in the mirror, bud.
Physically or mentally in 25 years.
God, I could say something about myself, but I shouldn't, but I will.
Well, don't get to poke fun at yourself.
Jan Lee,
our
my friend from, you know, bazillion years, he showed a picture of this barbecue for one of his birthdays on the lakefront. And there's people at the thing, and I noticed Robin, and I said, "Who's that guy?" And he goes, "That's you." I didn't even recognize myself. I had to be 70 pounds lighter, black hair. I mean, once I looked closer, I realized it was me, but just by a glance, I didn't even think that was me.
Oh, man. Well, my wife thinks looks at me like I'm Ralph Macchio because all of my pictures in my teens, I look like Ralph Macchio from The Karate Kid. And the funny thing is, in high school, Riverside High School, I was bullied pretty bad because I was a smart aleck. I told, in eighth grade, I told this guy who was a junior at the time, his name was Junior, and he was a junior in high school at the time. The basketball gym was packed. I'm walking with my friend Matt. There's no place to sit except next to this girl who's the girlfriend of Junior. And we sit down. I sit next to his girlfriend, and Matt sits on the other side of me. And I'm an eighth grader, and he's a junior. And he says to me, "The seat's taken." I look at him, and I go, "Yeah, by me."
Why does that not surprise me?
They couldn't wait. Those rising seniors. I became a freshman at Riverside High School because, man, I got my butt snapped by wet towels in the locker room by the TA, or I got a concussion. It was crazy, man.
Well, just so the other way to look at the medical stuff, and I don't know how we get on this. It's all about truth and numbers. I know what we pay at PTI for people's insurance.
Yeah.
And we've been in business since 1991, and I can tell you, my brother can tell you every year how much it's gone up. And right now, the average...
how much has it gone up for you?
It's for now, here again, it's a cheating story because I'm going to say it's like $2,500 a person. But now...
What was it back then?
Okay, well, 1,000 maybe. But here's the cheating part.
But you've done a lot of substitutions.
Well, okay, but back then, the deductible was a little less.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff was a little less. But here, I'll give you a shot. When I first... I shouldn't even say this. When I got in the business, 1982, actually it was a little earlier than that, the first time I hired a clerk was 1982. Mike Johns, Johnsy, 6'6", big guy, with a family. So guess what I had to pay per month for his insurance? Now, he was a younger family, but a family. Wife of childbearing age, of course. He had two more kids. What do you think the cost was? Now, mine was free.
I would say a couple $100.
Try $75.
$75? Wow.
Now, for me, all I had to do was become a market maker. I didn't even, first app put me on their policy. I didn't even made a trade. Hmm. If I made five trades a month, their whole total revenue was $5 if they picked up my insurance.
Yeah.
So $75, you put that in the inflation calculator.
It was a small component of your compensation back then.
No, I had no compensation. I was an independent trader. They didn't pay me.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is you have your... What you're compensated and throwing in the insurance is not a big deal because it's such a small expense.
Yeah, so it was. I think I was paying. But
if it was a much larger expense, they wouldn't have thrown it in.
I'm guessing. No, right. But I wasn't even. I don't know. They even got me on the list. I wasn't even an employee.
You were below an employee.
No, I was an independent contractor. If I did a trade, I cleared through them.
Yeah,
I'll explain that to everybody one day. But I was TPH first op, 690 was their number. So when you identify a trade with me, you put TPH 690 down there. I was a trader, and 690 was first stop declaring firm. Anyway, so that number today, guess how much?
I don't know, 2,500.
No, well, it is 2,500. If you put it in the inflation calculator, it's $266 bucks.
What is it?
$266. If you use the CPI calculator, so
tenfold.
It's ten.
Yeah, I've
times.
Always thought that medical prices in general, medical services in general in the United States, are probably 10 times more than what they'd be in a pure market system. And the reason why I say that is because my brother Rod, instead of having his
dental
work
done. Careful
when
you say that. Careful when you say it, because if you're talking about drugs, you're talking about patent laws.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But my brother Rod had, he had to get dental implants, and he could do it in Lewiston, Idaho for $12,000, or he could have it done in Los Algodones, Mexico for $1,200, and he opted for Mexico. And when he did that, him and I had like week-long conversations about what was going on the Mexican side of the Yuma-Arizona border, and it was the complete opposite of what was going on in Yuma. In Yuma, there was a plethora of entertainment and hotels and restaurants, but over the border was the opposite. It was medical services, dental services, optical services, was pharmacy. And there were businesses for poor people and middle-income people and rich people, and people go to Yuma, Arizona to get this competitive health care. They do it from Canada. They do it from the United States. So I, from that point on, I'm like, yeah, I bet if we had a market system, if we could observe the universe where our medical system is a market-based system, not this cartelized system we have now that's a shared monopoly, essentially, which is worse with the third-party payer system, it's probably 10 times more than it needs to be, the cost of American healthcare.
Funny you should mention it. The young lady downstairs, I mentioned this before, she had a... I don't know anything about it. Anyway, she... When you see somebody, one of their eyes is pointing a little bit off. Usually when you're a kid, they identify that and put a patch on one eye and strengthen the muscle. And once in a while when you're a kid, you need to have the surgery. I mean, there were kids who did.
Yeah, I had a couple friends with it. Yeah.
Well, so hers was like that. And I just assumed that, her parents didn't fix it when she was a kid. And she's part non-Caucasian, so I figured her parents didn't have the dough, which is, you shouldn't think that way. But all of a sudden, one day, it seems like it's getting a little worse, and I see her with her hand, like, kind of itching it. And I don't see her for a while. Comes back, and then she looks perfect. And I go, Cindy, what the hell happened? She says, it's busy tonight. Come back tomorrow. Won't be anybody here. I got to give you my whole story. People, for whatever reason, feel that they can talk to me. Turns out, she goes on the internet, and it's some kind of a syndrome, where it's actually a nerve behind your ear that's getting, I won't say crushed, but it's being pinned somehow. It just happens. And so she finds, gets the test, and, what do you get, the CAT scan or God knows what, some big test. And they find out, we got to operate, like in her head. So they make this slit behind her ear. The guy goes in there, and he fixes it. I suppose it's not that hard of a fix. It's right near the surface. Who the hell knows? Because it's essentially a surface nerve. So it's right there. Again, I know nothing about nerves. And she goes, it's not getting any better. And I keep telling these guys, it's not any better. And they go, yeah, it's fine. Give it another week. So finally, she goes online and said it should have been fixed right away if they actually did the job right. So she starts digging, and the best guy in the world for this is a guy in Japan.
Hmm.
She's like, okay. So the guy in Japan, she contacts them, and the guy says, go get another scan, see what the deal is. Well, the first place won't give her another scan because they're still telling her it's fine.
Yeah.
And so she packs her bags. And
That right there, that statement you just made signifies that it is a cartel.
Yeah.
Because can you imagine McDonald's going, well, you already purchased a Big Mac. We're not going to sell you a second
one. Well, so
that right there tells you it's a cartel.
So the cost of this, now I didn't ask how much she paid. The insurance cost was like $105,000 or something.
Wow.
And who knows, what kind of discount they got the insurance. I mean, I never saw the bill, so I don't know if the list price was $105 and insurance paid $60. I mean, who the hell knows? But so. The guy says, we plan on spending 2 weeks. If we got to do something, you can't get on a plane for 2 weeks. So she packs her mom up, and off they go. She goes, I hadn't talked to my mom in any length of time for a while, so we're just going to spend 2 weeks in Japan. And so the guy says, just bring everything over here, come a day before, and we'll do all the tests here. Gets over there, and the guy goes, well, they did a nice job. She goes, I only saw the guy for 5 minutes before the surgery. He goes, they did a nice job. They just did the wrong nerve.
Oh man! So, that's malpractice.
So I go, you gotta be. Well, first of all, I mean, she didn't. They're so good at this now. She got a beautiful head of hair. So she, of course, leans over, pulls her hair over her ear, and I can see these two lines, like maybe a quarter inch away from each other. They didn't have to shave or anything like that. And so I don't know how they managed to do that, but she goes, "No, I'm fine." I said, "How much was this all in?" He goes, "It was 10-5.
Yeah, 10 times, yeah.
Was that, yeah. And so then she, and I said, "What'd you do for 2 weeks?" She goes, "Mom and I got a rail pass. We went all over Japan, saw every temple. We had a great time. Plus, I realized how great of a lady my mom is. I don't get a chance to talk to her too much." She goes, "It was a terrific trip."
This is the kind of thing that drives me nuts, because people will say that there's going to be more malpractice in the United States if we go down this competitive market system, if we get rid of the status quo, which is a cartelized shared monopoly. And my argument is, but malpractice occurs in the United States all the time.
All the time.
The wrong organs pulled out. The wrong nerve is operated on. So our current system doesn't prevent malpractice. In fact, it probably encourages
it. It encourages it.
The moral hazard that is created.
I did tell you my buddies
are not bearing the full cost of this.
I did tell you my buddy who's been on Eliquis, which is a blood thinner for a while. And I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $6,500 a year, and your insurance like splits it with you or something. So if you're on Social Security, it's a big number. It's like $3,000 or $2,500, something like that. Even if you got the insurance with the Medicare, the first time they got to pay all of it, you know. Then it goes down a little bit. Then you get into the, what do they call it, the hole, the donut, or the middle, where you got to pay more again. Then at the end, anyway, the guy showed me his taxes, and it was maybe $6,400, and he had to pay $3,200, even with insurance. Well, a buddy of his gets him on this Canadian outfit. He's got the same thing, 3 months for 85 hours.
Wow.
Instead of 1,500 hours. I mean, for God's sake, you can talk about insurance, you can talk about if you're from the extreme left and the government's going to pay for this, or we're going to have Medicare for all. I don't care who the hell pays for it. If you're paying $1,500 for something that costs $75, you're going down a rat hole. It's just a question of which rat you meet first, right? I mean,
the problem with pharmaceuticals is the fact that these pharmaceutical companies are probably more like legal firms that shop for and purchase patents and then engage in patent litigation to ensure that they have this monopoly in whatever patents they purchased. So that's probably the first thing that's going on. I've had arguments with patent lawyers who say, well, if we get rid of patents, there would be no research and development in healthcare.
Bullshit.
In pharmaceutical.
Bullshit.
And that is just, that's crap. You know why?
Yeah.
Because there are people, young people, who want to improve the lives of people. They will do it because they want to help save lives. They want to stop a disease. So they will invent and discover stuff because they're good people and they have a passion for this. That's why I do what I'm doing. I don't do it out of money. I do it because I have fun doing it and I have a passion for it.
How much? You're going to get the head of Pfizer saying, well, if there's no patents, we're not going to research.
No, but everybody else
okay,
will.
Okay, but everybody else will.
Pfizer's not going to do it.
Yeah.
They're going to get out of the business because all the team of lawyers, I just can imagine the team of lawyers that they have. And they probably spend most of their time suing people for patent infringement, I would suspect.
Well, I'll go through this for a couple of minutes because you're an economist. But some of the, you and I, well, I'm not a PhD, you are. But some of the training we've had has been different. I mean, I took the behavioral side.
My training is different than everybody else's because my training is from the real world. I took one econ class.
Wait a minute, the real math. Mine's from where? Bizarre world?
I took money in banking as a sophomore, and that is the entire undergraduate experience I had in economics.
Really?
So I never got baptized in mainstream orthodoxy. I was never that way. When I got my PhD, the models were all orthodoxy, mainstream. But when I started teaching macro principles on my own at A&T, I came to the conclusion that these mainstream models are just ridiculously dumb.
Well, I mean, let me walk you through this just for a hair, and then we got to go. S&P futures down 52.
Oh, it's 9 o'clock. Wow,
time flies when I'm talking to you. It really does. But if there were no patents, all right, say you and I, let's go back, 70 years, we invented the hula hoop. Okay, now everybody loves the damn thing. Who knows who invented it? We'll say Ricky invented it because I can't invent anything. And all of a sudden, we start marketing these things. It costs us $2 to make. all of a sudden they're a rage. We could charge $10. Okay, where immediately somebody's going to say, wait a minute, these two, this Hal and Chief, those two idiots are making $8 on this hula hoop.
We can jump in.
We can have a factory to do this. Now, we put in the research, whatever research there was. These guys, we can have a factory up and running in a month to sell these hula hoops for $8. And we're still going to make six, and those two bozos aren't going to be selling anything.
They're going to be out of business.
Yeah. Or we could say, okay, we know it costs $2 to make this thing, and we can eat. And that's going to take a while for somebody to put a factory together. It's going to take some investment. If we charge $3.50 or $4, or maybe even $5, somebody's going to look at it and go, "Those two bozos."
The margins are insufficient.
They're doing better. If we invested all this money, we could probably sell it for $3.75 instead of $4.50. It's not worth it. So yeah. we get some monopoly pricing for like a little while, and if we're not greedy, we probably could get less than monopoly pricing, but more than competitive pricing for like a long time.
Then you know, funny because Vivint Home Smart Arena CEO, he was at a NBA Power Lunch series that we had at Westminster, and I asked him that same question. I go, is it better to just keep your price low as you scale your business than it is to charge a high price, which invites competitors? And he came to the same conclusion that we have come to, that you want to keep that price low to keep the competitors at bay.
You still might have a guy who's building a guy or lady who's building a factory for something else.
By the way, the Nerf football was invented by a place kicker from Minnesota.
Really?
And I don't think they patented it. He created the Nerf football. He took it to the company that sells it still, and they gave him royalties. I don't think he patented it. I think he just made it, made a prototype. They loved it, they've been selling it.
Well, if they were Google, this would have made it anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, bud, what do you got going for Labor Day weekend? Anything special?
I'm gonna build an exterior door for my condo in Utah, and then I'm gonna drive it out because it's a 40x80 opening. And to hire somebody to build it for me and install it would be more than it would be for me to make it and drive it across country. So that's what I'm going to be doing that next week.
See, now you don't know the right guys.
And I'll be able to hang out with my brother and umpire some softball games in Utah.
So you're driving out to Utah?
Yeah, I'm going to drive, and then I'm going to umpire some softball games.
Oh, cool.
For fun, with my brother and his friend Terry.
Because actually there's a couple places in Chicago, and you got to know the dirty places, and if you just call one of the guys on TV to put a big door in, they're gonna want $3,000-$4,000 or something.
I know this door I can make for about $200. Well, I can drive across country for about $300, and then I can have fun with my brother and umpire.
It better be all downhill for $300 with gas prices where they are. But
I'm renting a car that gets 39 miles a gallon, and I'm gonna put down the back seat. So the door is going to go through the trunk.
Why do I get the feeling this door is going to be sticking out the ass of this car?
It's going to be.
Well, anyway.
There's
a place here in Chicago, if you call them up and you spec out the door, they'll make it for you for like $350 and do a real nice job. So,
yeah.
But then you got to install it yourself.
You got to ship it, though.
Well, no, you'll pick it up if you're here.
Yeah. But I'm going to make it myself. I like woodwork. I got into this thing called the Forge Workspaces. And they have 3D printers. They have a workshop, wood shop.
I'd love to see
this. I went and got checked out on the wood shop. Man, it is phenomenal.
I could see you and Carl out there making the door, arguing about economics, drinking beers. You guys be arguing about who gets to buy the next beer. Anyway, have a nice time. Be careful. Talk at you next week. Give us the whole story. Will you be back by Tuesday, or you just be on the road?
I'll be on the radio Tuesday because I'm going to make it probably Monday and Tuesday afternoon, and then Thursday, I'm going to start my drive across the country.
All right. Yeah. Well, we'll talk. I'll make sure you're careful next week. SP Futures now on 56.
I'll let you know what it looks like Tuesday morning.
You could send us a picture.
I will.
I hope it's going to be like square and not round or something. You know. SP Futures down 14.
Premium hardwood for the frame.
Oh, God. All right. Well, good luck. I can see you put some planning in this. Back tomorrow,
I've
Stocks
been
and Jocks.
I've been planning it for 3 years.
Why does that not surprise
you?
Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
The end of it, and that's all, folks.